everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 72nd episode. Happy New Year, everybody. This is our first episode of 2021. Boy, are we glad to say goodbye to 2020. It was pretty wild, but we made the most of it, and the end of the year wasn't all too bad. The holiday season was kind of nice.
Yeah, the holidays were pretty nice this year. There was no crazy runaround. There was no coordinating, getting everybody from point A to point B like we usually do. We actually got to just relax and enjoy the holidays with just Giacomo and I. We did have the kids for a short period, which was awesome, actually, because kids make the holidays, in my opinion, and they got to open their gifts here, and we played chase, and we played with slime, and they got a sit and spin, which was the real hit of the season. And Daisy was like, Auntie, you do it, and I was like, I can't, I'm too big. And she was like, try. So I got down, and as it turns out, I can still fit on a play school sit and spin, and both sit and spin. I can do it still. What was your favorite gift that you got this year, Giacomo?
This game called Clask. Actually, it was technically a birthday gift, but it was also the segue into several other gifts that you got. I mean, basically, it was like a whole bunch of games you gifted me, and I was super grateful for that because it's something I used to enjoy doing that I haven't done in a while. But Clask, playing that game specifically, whole lot of fun. They actually hold tournaments. It's a national game in, I want to say, Denmark, and they take it really seriously. It's like the silliest of all games with like such silly rules, which is why I think it's really funny.
I don't think it's silly. I don't think it's silly at all. It's like a combination of air hockey and foosball. But it's small, it's tiny, it fits on top of the table, and it's magnets that you use, so you control it from like under the board. Super, super fun. All Giacomo did during 2020 was complain that I didn't play enough games with him. So I made sure to get games for Christmas that seemed like they would be fun for both of us so that we could play some games together.
What was your favorite gift?
Roller skates. I got roller skates for Christmas. Giacomo's mom got me roller skates. Totally surprised me. I just said in passing a few times last year, like, man, I would really love to learn how to roller skate. And I'll be damned if I didn't get roller skates for Christmas and now I have to learn. I can roller blade, but I feel like roller skating is so much harder. I know a lot of people say it's the other way around, but I think whatever you learn first is the easiest. And yeah, it's freezing cold outside. And I'm trying to figure out a place where I can actually go to practice outside, because I think it would be so fun to get like pretty good at it. Yeah, and like pretty nice quality vegan roller skates. I'm psyched.
I gotta say, I was a little bit taken aback when I saw you skating through the house on Christmas Day.
I mean, skating is being generous, I think. Flailing through the house would be more accurate.
You took a look at me, you're like, so this is what it's like to be tall. And I was like, ugh.
But now we are rolling into the new year. Get it? Rolling? Roller skating? Rolling into the new year? Anyway, today's the new year. So we have some exciting New Year's things going on right now. As you guys probably remember, we launched the 28-day overhaul program in early November, and it was a huge hit. Hundreds of people did it. And now, you know, Giacomo and I, we made a YouTube video about this the other day. We kind of reflected on 2020 and what went well and what didn't go well. And, you know, one of the things that didn't go as well as it usually goes for us, like usually our fitness is like one of our top priorities. And this year, other things had to take priority over fitness. So our fitness kind of slipped a little bit. And we thought it would be really cool for us to do the overhaul challenge start to finish. So there's a lot of cornerstones of the overhaul program that we already make like key points in our life every single day, but we haven't actually run the program start to finish. And we thought, wouldn't it be cool if we actually did it as a group, like invited other people to do it with us at the same time as us. So we are starting a group of people doing the overhaul challenge starting on January 4th. So if you were one of the people who got the program in November, all you have to do is just make sure you're active in the Muscles by Brussels group. We're going to start there. That's where we'll be posting about it. And if you don't have the overhaul program, we're running a special so that more people can do this with us as a group for it for $17. So for $17, you get the whole 42-page program with nutrition guidelines, full training program, 10 recipes, sample shopping lists, accountability of the group, and you'll have tons of people doing it with you at the same time so we can all hold each other accountable. That'll be in the show notes if you want to do it. $17 for this program, I think, is a crazy steal. I'm super proud of this program and we're really excited to get started doing it. So January 4th, let's do it.
And also, if you've been enjoying this podcast, help us reach other people by leaving a review on your favorite podcast catcher, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or Google Podcasts, anywhere where you listen to your favorite podcast. It really helps us reach more people so we can have more listeners and more community together.
And we see them and we read them and we appreciate them and we take whatever feedback is in those reviews seriously. Yeah, leave us a review. It'll make us really happy. So what are we talking about today, Giacomo?
Well, usually we are proponents of habit building, and rightfully so. You need those kinds of routines to be successful. This episode is about habits that you want to consider leaving behind in 2020. It's an interesting topic because I really do feel like we have focused on the habits that you need to build and how to stack them and how to make them part of your routine. And I think that that is most of what you need to focus on when you want to create real change. However, once you have the basics nailed, when you start to take a look back and you realize that you can't do more things or that your habits and your routine are not working, it's usually because there are bad habits that are in the mix. And they might not necessarily be like vices or bad addictions or anything like that. They just might be things that you're used to doing. We're humans, we're creatures of habit, and whether we like it or not, we find things that we continue to do consistently just because we're doing them consistently, whether they're good, bad, or maybe they're just something we could do without because there's something else that we could be doing with our life to be more efficient and to reach our goals.
I also think 2020 was a really good year for building some really bad habits. I think a lot of people established habits that they wouldn't have otherwise if this had been like any normal year. So a lot of bad habits kind of crept in, I think, at the beginning of the pandemic. And now they're not just like a thing that you did to feel better for a minute. They're like things you're doing a lot and they're taking from you. They're not adding anything of value to your life. They're actually taking from you. And I think it's important to try and identify some of those things and try to leave them behind. Also, a lot of people find a lot of success by replacing a bad habit with a good habit. So all the good habits we talk about, you could literally use them to try to replace some of the bad habits here.
That's a great way to think about it. Honestly, if we just are like, well, quarantine is pretty much over, or when it's over, like you lean on that hope of things changing just because, I mean, in some ways, maybe things will work themselves out organically, but wouldn't it be nice to be proactive and work on things ahead of time? Reflect back on 2020, see what kind of bad habits were created, get real with yourself, also work on replacing those bad habits with good habits, like Danny said.
So Giacomo and I each have our own little list that we came up with independently. So let's go through it. Giacomo, go first.
Okay, pull out my fancy little list here. See if I could read my own handwriting. Probably not. I'll try. I'm gonna start with this one. Staying up late. If nothing else, I think that 2020 was a boring year. Like super boring. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was no lack of excitement and overstimulation in some ways between the media, the election, the crazy news that just keeps coming out more and more over the years, and this year was not the exception. I think in terms of being isolated and being at home and having to make your world smaller in that regard, I think that was pretty darn boring, actually. When we're bored, we look for a way to not be bored. I mean, it's one thing to sit with yourself and be like, okay, that's cool. Like, I can be bored, but to actually go to bed and feel like the day wasn't full because you didn't get to see anybody, you didn't get to socialize, you weren't able to basically live your life the way that you usually live your life. I think it led to a lot of people just staying up late, waiting for something to feel good about before they went to bed.
I just think time stopped mattering. For a lot of people, time didn't even matter. The number of times my clients have just said, what is time anyway? Because it has felt like time is just this big blob. So yeah, a lot of people got into really, really poor sleep habits this year because they didn't have anything they had to wake up for. They didn't have to wake up to get dressed, look nice, to go to the office. They could literally just like throw on a t-shirt and roll in front of their Zoom screen and start working. And some people didn't even have Zoom meetings to go to. There was no reason to go to bed. So that like draw to just like chilling out and watching Netflix at night drew on and on and on. And some people actually like reversed their sleep cycles. So they were awake all night and sleeping all day, which is so not good for you, especially to flip-flop between those sleep cycles. So yeah, staying up late, especially if you have to get up early. Because when I was a bartender, I didn't even go to bed till 3 or 4 in the morning, but I wouldn't get up until noon because I wouldn't have to go to work until 5, right? If that's your routine, then that's fine. That's not staying up late. That's getting 8 hours of sleep for you. But if you have to get up at 6, 7, 8 o'clock and you're staying up till 1, 2, 3 in the morning, like, no, that is really a terrible, terrible habit. And it literally sets you up for failure for the next several days. It takes a long time to like fix a sleep debt. I mean, a lot of studies say you can't even fix a sleep debt. It's not like you can just make it up by sleeping more on the weekends. So good, bad habit, Giacomo.
And some tips on how to do it. Best tips?
Go to bed at the same time every night. And this is literally the monthly challenge for our clients. As of today. Hi guys, this is your challenge. Probably already told you about it, but yeah, go to bed at the same time every single night, regardless of what you have to do in the morning. Pick a time, stick to it. Even if you can't force yourself to go to sleep, it's very hard. You can't just force yourself to fall asleep, but you can get your butt in bed at that time.
I'm not as good as Danny is about just getting into the bedroom, but I do like to give myself some cues and reminders that it's time, and I find that it helps.
Giacomo's cue that it's time to go to bed is that Danny is standing over him asleep on the couch going, Giacomo, it's bedtime. Come to bed. You have to come to bed now. Hey, fine. You can sleep there, but your neck's going to hurt in the morning. It's on you. That's Giacomo's cue to go to bed.
I kind of just like sleeping and snoring next to Danny. It makes me feel closer to her. It's worth it. Is it though? No, but seriously, I like to brush my teeth and that tells me it's about time to go to bed before I'm super tired and falling asleep on the couch. And another good tip is to set your phone to like bedtime mode. It will literally remind you like, hey, it's time to go to bed. Something.
I've never had success with that. I know phones do it, but it's never helped me.
What about you, Danny? What's your habit to let go of?
Endless scrolling. It's, you know, it has nothing to do with fitness or nutrition. Specifically, just sitting there scrolling Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or Reddit, my guilty pleasure right there. You know, it's not completely invaluable. There's a lot of important things that you know, you stay in touch with people, which has been more important this year than ever on certain social media platforms. I love to read and learn, and that's what I love Reddit for. But there comes a point where you are just scrolling and you're not getting anything of value out of it anymore. It's literally just eating up your day. How many times have you gone to check like the time on your phone? Just, oh, what time is it? Oh, I have a notification. Swipe, scroll, 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 scroll. 20 minutes later, you're like, what did I even pick my phone up for in the first place? This is a terrible, terrible habit. One that I am absolutely working on. I'm not great about this. My phone distracts me all day long. And I am keenly aware of what a ginormous waste of time it is. And I think that it's something that we should probably all actively work on doing less and less and less of.
It's hard because these little handy dandy devices are what we do everything on these days. So if you're keeping up with your social media, if you do that kind of thing, or if you're in between tasks that you accomplish on your phone because so much is done digitally these days, it's kind of hard to put it down. It's like, well, I'll just buy my time for the next minute or two while I'm in between tasks, or it just becomes automated thing. But yeah, setting those boundaries for yourself can be so healthy, and it forces you to be more efficient with the time that you do have on your screens, especially that little screen that fits in the palm of your hand that can follow you into the bathroom. It can follow you into the bedroom. It can literally be wherever you are at all times. You're pretty much chained to that thing. So unless you physically remove yourself from your phone, chances are that you are going to wind up scrolling too much.
Yeah.
Personally, I leave my phone out of the bedroom. I just put it on the coffee table before I go to bed. And it felt uncomfortable for about 2-3 months, honestly speaking. And now it's just something I have to do in order to feel healthy and get a good night's sleep, for example. But whatever that means to you to cut down on your screen time, I think that's a great one, actually.
A couple of things that I did to make this a little bit better is I moved all of my social media apps off of my home screen. So they're not on my front page anymore. I have to like swipe several times to get to Facebook or Instagram. I also turned off all of my notifications. So I don't get Facebook notifications or Instagram notifications. The only notifications that I get are for text messages, because if someone has my cell phone number, I want them to be able to reach me, and phone calls. I don't get email notifications. I get zero notifications. And that has helped a lot because it's the notifications that distract you. But even when you have your notifications turned off, you still get that stupid little red bubble with the number on it when there's stuff to be looked at. So I just moved those right out of my sight. Because I do a lot of work on social media, Giacomo's laughing and I don't know what he's laughing at.
Should I say it out loud? No, I just joke to myself how Danny's the person from like the 80s and 90s movies when cell phones started to come out and they're on loud, like her phone's on loud. But yeah, I think finding a way to silence those notifications when they're not necessary is helpful.
Well, my phone has to, you're such a jerk. My Sorry. Phone has to be on loud because of the app that we do all of our coaching through. The Vegan Proteins coaching app has to be on loud or you can't hear the videos. So that's why mine's on loud. I'm working. I don't know what you're doing, mm-hmm. but whatever. Because I do work on my phone all day, like I use my phone for work all day. My battery dies probably twice a day. Like I have to recharge it twice a day. That's how much I use my phone. But that you have to be able to tell the difference between when you're being productive or not. So I'll check social media in the morning for about 20 minutes or so. All of them. I go through all of them. And then at night when I'm done working, that's when I, you know, that's my time to do whatever like useless thing I want to do. When all of my to-dos are checked off for the day. I saw this meme the other day and it just crushed me. And I sent it to Giacomo and it was like the end of the day when you're watching the big screen and scrolling the little screen to reward yourself for staring at the medium screen all day. And I was like, no, that's so accurate. Anyway, but at the end of the day, if I want to watch Breaking Bad and scroll mindlessly on my phone, that's what I'm going to do and I'm not going to feel bad about it. But if you're finding yourself doing this throughout the day and it's interfering with your work or you're not listening to your partner or your kids because you're so busy scrolling, like, problem. That's a problem and you want to actively work on it. What do you got next, Giacomo? Giacomo's name is not actually Giacomo, guys. I call him Giacomo because our niece calls him Giacomo. Giacomo?
Say my name. What's my name?
Giacomo? Anyway, what's next?
My next one is snacking in between meals. I think this is a big one.
It sure is now that everyone's working from home.
Mm-hmm. But even for those working from home, again, that Groundhog Day syndrome, when things are just the same and they're drab and they're dull because you can't take the staleness out of your life and it feels like you're living in a movie that's just repeating over and over again, you find ways to just like seek comfort or change. And sometimes it's food, and having your three squares with two snacks in between is no longer a thing. Before you know it, you find yourself grazing and snacking on things that you would ordinarily never eat. And it's like, oh, I'm just gonna do this. And you get a little bit of a dopamine hit here or there, you feel good. And then 2-3 weeks later, you turn around and it's like, what am I doing? And you just can't stop.
I think now that, like I said, because everyone's working from home, everybody is constantly like 10 feet from their kitchen. So back when everybody was working in offices, yeah, I guess you could bring snacks to your desk, but I think most people didn't. Like it would be weird if you were the person just eating at your desk all day long, right? But now no one can see you, no one is watching you, you're 10 feet from the kitchen, and like every time you get bored, even for a second, you know, our brains are looking for pleasure. Food is pretty pleasurable, to your point. So that's a guideline that I recommend to a lot of my clients, not because I think snacking is inherently bad. I don't. I actually think snacking can be fine. But I also think it can get out of control for a lot of people very quickly. You can snack too much in between meals, and then by the time your next meal time comes, you're not hungry. So then you skip that meal, but then an hour or two later, you are hungry. So then you eat more snacks, and it's like you're never eating real meals and you're just eating crappy snacks. So I recommend to people to try, if this is an issue for them, to try to not snack in between their main meals. I think that it's helpful. Along the lines of this one that Giacomo just said, not snacking in between meals, I also would say try to not eat in front of a screen. This is also one Giacomo and I are going to try to leave behind in 2020. Remember that end of the day time where we just sit? We often have a snack at the end of the day, but it is just a snack. When you're eating in front of a screen, whether it's the TV or your laptop, or you're just scrolling on your phone, you see how a lot of these go like hand in hand in hand. You're not giving your full attention to your food. And when you're not being attentive to your food, you're not being mindful of what you're eating, you're a lot more likely to overeat. You're gonna overeat. And if you're eating snacks in between meals and staring at your screen while you scroll right along, you're gonna eat way more chips, for example, while you scroll, than you would have if you just took the serving of chips and put it on a plate and sat down and ate it and paid attention to it.
Well, yeah, because like whatever you were going to be paying attention to, you've now diverted that energy and resources to whatever it is that you're mindlessly snacking on because you're staring at your phone. It's like you're almost checking out from not only your meal, from your environment, whether it was communicating with somebody or thinking about what you were going to do at the end of the day to decompress or what have you. Like, I feel it's important to take breaks in between the screens and also to not rely on food purely for comfort, basically.
Just be mindful while you're eating. Watching a screen while you're eating robs you of your mindfulness of your food. And if you're not mindful of your food, you're a lot more likely to make poor decisions. Try really, really hard. This is a really hard one to break, to eat without a screen in front of you.
What about training? Focusing on pounds moved versus form. I think this is an ongoing challenge for most, and whether you're working out with bands or dumbbells or machines or what have you, you want to beat your book. You want to get stronger. And the easiest way to gauge whether or not you've gotten stronger is if you're able to do more work the next time you go to train. So it winds up becoming something you focus heavily on when it comes to training, which is all well and good. I think it's important to make sure you're pushing hard enough. And we have some folks out there that are literally doing themselves a disservice by not lifting heavy enough. Mm-hmm. So please, by all means, like, don't take this to heart and use it as an excuse to not lift hard and heavy. However, once you do get the appropriate amount of resistance and you're pushing, you want to make sure to focus on how well you're moving, because there's a shelf life to how long you could focus on how much more weight can I lift the next workout. And eventually, if you don't focus on your form becomes compromised, and the amount of weight you can lift over time becomes compromised too.
And you're way more likely to get hurt.
Yeah.
If you're just always focused on, oh, I want to hit a new PR, I want to hit a new PR, I want to hit a new PR, and your form starts slipping, even if it's a little bit, even if your form is just off by a little bit, the more weight you add to it, the more you're misloading that weight, the more likely you are to get hurt. And if you get hurt, you're likely going to have to start over from scratch. And it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. Plus, we talk about progressive overload and how that is like absolutely the most important thing in terms of making progress with muscle building and in the gym. But there's so many more ways to progressively overload than just adding more weight. You can add more reps. You can do the reps a bit slower. You can move better. You can make these movements of higher quality. That is also a way to progressively overload without just adding weight. And I think a lot of people forget about that one because it's just more fun. And it is for everybody. And anybody that tells you it's not more fun to lift more weight is a liar. All of us want to be lifting more weight, but you have to be responsible. Don't try to lift more weight if your form can't handle lifting more weight.
What else do you have for us, Danny?
I feel like I'm going to come for some people with this one. Some people are about to feel attacked. This became a huge crutch for a lot of people in 2020, to the point that it just almost turned into a running joke for so many people, was drinking. people started drinking a lot more this year. And I understand why. Like, everybody, I mean, I probably drank more this year than I have in many, many years. I wouldn't say it was a lot, but for me, I barely ever drink. And this year, I, you know, had a drink probably twice a week for most of the year, which is a ton for me. That was me. Like, I know better. I was really, really stressed and just wanted something at the end of the day to almost differentiate that mark of, like, my work day has ended, my me time has begun. And it was really easy to do that with, like, one of my homemade beers that I made, which I was super proud of, which were delicious, and I stand by them 100%. But a lot of people found themselves doing this, like, every day. And then it wasn't one drink every day. Then it was a couple drinks every day. Then it was, like, a lot of people ended up drinking a lot more than they would have liked. I don't have a problem with people drinking in general. Like, I am not straight edge. I've never been straight edge. I've certainly had sober years where I just haven't touched anything for years, and so have you, Giacomo. Mm-hmm. In fact, this year, I think, is one of them.
Incidentally.
He let me drink that homebrew by myself, guys. Is that cold or what?
Did you feel judged?
Yes.
not the intention, I swear.
I don't have a problem with people consuming alcohol from time to time. I think it's important to try to make it work within your macros, which I think most people do very, very wrong. They have no idea what the macros are and what they're drinking. Did you know a pint of beer is like 75, 80 grams of carbs for a not light beer, like just for a regular beer? 75 to 80 grams of carbs for a pint of beer. Wild. People are not counting it that way because they look it up in MyFitnessPal and they're like, huh, 300 calories and zero carbs. That's sweet. So they count the calories and not the macros, whatever. But the fact of the matter is alcohol is poison. I know that sounds like a jerky thing to say, but it's the truth. Your body recognizes it as poison, and it does everything. It basically shuts systems down to prioritize getting that out of your body. You know, lots of things can be poison when taken in. You know, water can be poison if you drink enough of it. Alcohol has no physical benefits for you. I often say, you know, there's a time and a place for frosting. Cake frosting could be beneficial in a certain scenario. Alcohol, I cannot think of a single scenario where alcohol is actually beneficial for you. I just think you gotta be real with yourself about it. It's not doing you any favors whatsoever. Daily consumption of alcohol over time has health implications. It just does. I'm not saying quit drinking entirely. I'm saying drink much more mindfully. Be intentional. If you're going to have a drink, be really intentional about it. Don't let it just turn into a daily, end of the day, I want to wind down and kick my feet up habit, because it actually freaked me out how quickly it felt like a habit for somebody who goes years without drinking to suddenly, like, every night my body would say to me, hey, why don't you just crack one open? And I was like, as somebody who very much so likes to be completely in control of my own body, for something else in my brain or body to be like, just go crack one open. I was like, where is that coming from? And it was really freaking weird. And I'm very conscious of it. So I think somebody who's probably not as conscious of it, you know, that could creep up to the point where you're drinking a bottle of wine several nights a week. I think that's a habit to leave behind.
Whether you're conscious of it or not, it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, you're left with something that you look back on and you're like, probably don't want to be doing this, and now I just have to stop. And I think that's where it's like, hey, that habit that you leave behind, and just be honest with yourself as far as how you can do it mindfully and in moderation if it's something you enjoy. Speaking about liquids and things to leave behind, staying hydrated as opposed to hydrating with alcohol, which is not a thing.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Sorry. I get a little too silly sometimes. But anyways, no, in all seriousness, the habit to leave behind is not staying properly hydrated. It's pretty easy to fall into a cycle where you're just not staying hydrated, and it's a real issue because you wind up looking for hydration by overeating because food has water. You wind up having brain fog because your brain and your body are just not transporting nutrients or in an oxygenated way. Like, you don't have oxygen flowing through your system when you're not properly hydrated. So it just puts a strain on your whole system, basically. And it's pretty easy to fall into a habit of not being properly hydrated when your routine has changed. Like me personally, I used to stay hydrated by getting a lot of my water in while I trained at the gym. And it was my thing. I would take my water jug with me. I'm like, I brought this big, heavy water jug with me. I better drink some of it while I train. And now the gyms are opened up again over here, at least, and I'm training with my mask on. I don't feel comfortable drinking. Like, there's no safe place to drink. So I wind up finding excuses for myself and not hydrating during the day. And it's a real problem.
I think that's a little bit silly. I drink my water at the gym. Like, I'm training with my mask, but as soon as somebody's, like, if I have space and nobody's around me, I just pull it down and chug my water and put it back up. And I've told Giacomo, I think this is silly.
I know, but I'm, like, hard up on it. If I feel like if I don't create this boundary and my rule from this rule for myself, that I'll just wind up unintentionally leaving my mask down. And I'm just kind of hard up about it because I have, like, this irrational fear that if I start drinking water, they'll accidentally leave my mask down for too long and, you know, risk spreading disease. I mean, as it is, like, I'm not crazy keen about training in the gym, but I take the risk anyway because you keep your mask on, you try to do the right thing and keep your distance from people and stay healthy.
Here's a bad habit that I think a lot of people did pick up this year was blending your life together, not having any differentiating factors in your life. And here's what I mean by that. When everybody started working at home, I mean, I saw this coming from a mile away because I went through this back in 2013 when I started working from home. When you're working from home, it's like you're never 100% working. Like, you could be in, like I just said, you could be in your pajamas. You could be working on your couch with your, like, your feet kicked up and your laptop in your lap. You're never 100% present at work, but you're also never 100% present at home. Your brain is always in somewhere in between where it's like in the middle of work and in the middle of home, and there's no more work life and home life. It's just all blurred together. And I think it's really bad for people. I actually feel like we're like in the middle of this giant social experiment. We will see in the next, probably just the next year, the toll that this is taking on people's mental health. Because I know at the beginning, everybody was like, yeah, this sucks. But like, hey, cool. I get to work from home. That's pretty sweet. As somebody who made that transition years ago, I remember that it was not sweet. It was not sweet to just start working from home like I thought it was going to be. It was really hard to create structure in my life where, you know, these are the hours that I work and this is where I sit when I work and this is where what I do when I'm not working and I'm not going to open my laptop or check my email past these hours. Like, it took me personally years to be able to do that. And, you know, I'm still, especially this year, this year was almost like a step backwards for me in that department because a lot of the things that I would do in my normal life, I just couldn't do. So I had more free time and I was like, well, I guess I could just work on a new project. So I found myself working more than I would normally. And I think a lot of people found themselves in this boat where even though they're working from home and that gives this illusion of more freedom and more control over their own life, they're probably actually working more hours now than they were before. You know, however it is that you need to divide up your life so that it makes sense. So this is work, this is home. Home does not interfere with work. Work does not interfere with home. Do it because you might not even realize how blurry your life has gotten until it's like really bad, until it's just all so intertwined with each other that it's really hard to unintertwine. I would say make sure that you have clear boundaries within your life, especially if you're a new work from homer.
Right. And in a similar vein, taking no days off, essentially. And this can basically have to do with your work-life balance and also with your balance as far as your pursuit of your fitness goals, essentially. Everything sort of blended into one another. And like you were saying earlier in the conversation, time has sort of, I don't know if it's stopped per se, but it like doesn't matter as much anymore because so much has changed. And this weird social experiment continues. You wind up getting to a point where it's like the things that you would normally do on the weekend are no longer available. So what's the point of not working on the weekend when you can, hey, you don't know what's going to happen with the economy. You don't know what's going to happen with the future of your job. So just keep working. Just keep working 7 days a week. It'll be fine. Before you know it, 3-4 months later, you turn around. It's like, well, crap, I can't keep doing this rate. And was it not good for my mental health? Was it even going to move me in the right direction over the course of the next 3 years? Can I balance myself out after this and still find success? There's consequences to working around the clock, for example, and taking no days off. Similarly, in the gym, can you use training as an outlet, sure. But when you wind up risking, and I don't like using this word anymore, but we'll just use it for lack of a better word, overtraining, you wind up becoming too fatigued. And when you can't manage your fatigue, it compromises your ability to get better results, and it compromises your ability to continue training long term. So I think, just like in general, the taking no things off, initially I was, in my head, I was thinking about those who prefer to train too often, because that's something that I feel like is a timeless habit to leave behind, and something that the fitness industry just perpetuates. Take no days off, go harder and harder. But in the context of what 2020 was, yes, to Danny's point, this overworking in every possible way in life kind of blending, it, I feel like it's very much so a thing, as far as like doing something over and over again 7 days a week to the detriment of your health. The last one that I have is convenience foods over whole foods. I think at some point, after the thrill of meal planning, prepping, and food tracking is gone, comfort foods aside, I think we rely on convenience foods because they're convenient. It makes so much more sense to batch cook foods out of convenience that are harder to prepare but are still convenient once you make them, than to start buying more and more packaged convenience foods, because more often than not, they're going to lack nutrient density and they're going to leave you wanting more. And that's one of the reasons. And the other thing is, like, an excess of convenience foods is a little wasteful as far as the excess packaging. It's not environmentally friendly, and it's harder to make the right choices on a macro level as far as getting in the right balance of foods for your fitness goals. So there's all kinds of reasons to consider not relying on convenience foods and to favor whole foods, which will ultimately make you feel better too. While a protein bar or a bag of pretzels, for example, might be the thing that you need to grab and go and make sure that you stay on track, for the most part, they tend to be harder to digest. And when you balance out all the convenience foods that keep creeping their way into your meal plan, eventually you wind up becoming unbalanced.
My last one here is a big one, and this is a habit that I think we should all leave behind, and that's breaking promises to yourself. We talked about this in our Consistently Consistent podcast, which was a few episodes back, but this is such a destructive habit. Every time you say you're going to do something, and I don't mean say it to somebody else, I mean say it even in your head to yourself, okay, I'm going to do this thing starting on this day. Every time you say you're going to do something and then you don't do it, you learn to not trust yourself a little bit more. You basically learn that your word is not to be trusted. You learn that you're a liar. You learn that you say you're gonna do stuff and you're just not gonna follow through, till it gets to the point that even as you're saying it, you don't even believe yourself. This could absolutely have to do with fitness and nutrition. Like, oh, I'm gonna start my new program on Monday, or I'm gonna, but it could be about anything. I'm gonna clean my room tomorrow, and you don't do it. Like, every single time you do that, you just cut your confidence in yourself down and down and down and down. And eventually you don't trust yourself anymore. And if you don't trust yourself, does it really get worse than that? If anything, if this is something you really struggle with, I would say don't make huge promises to yourself to start. Make tiny promises to yourself. Not, I'm gonna clean my room tomorrow. I'm gonna make my bed tomorrow. Okay, that's pretty small. Start with little things. Make your bed. Not, I'm gonna run 5 miles tomorrow. I'm gonna walk around the block tomorrow. Start with little promises that you can keep, because just like every time you break a promise, you cut yourself down, every time you keep a promise, you build yourself up. That builds on top of itself until eventually you trust yourself implicitly. You then become the type of person that does what they say they're going to do. And that is so stinking powerful. So powerful. This is why we believe in small habits in the first place. Because if you say, I'm gonna run 10 miles this weekend, and you haven't run in months and months, you literally just set yourself up for failure. You're not gonna do it, or you're gonna get hurt trying to do it, and you're gonna learn to not trust yourself. Small little habits, make those promises to yourself and keep them. But do try to leave breaking promises to yourself in the past, it will change your entire life 100 times over.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your sentiment there on breaking promises to yourself, Danny. It's one of those things where we say what we want to do and we like relying on hope and the fact that we want to do this thing. But if it's something that we don't actually work on, we just cut ourselves more and more and more each time we have this good intention in our mind of something we promised to ourselves that we're going to do. It's one thing if you let someone else down, and that's bad when you make a promise you can't keep to a friend or a loved one or what have you. When you make a promise to yourself and you don't honor it, there's no one left to blame. And that just hurts. That just hurts like on a deeper level because there's no one...
There's nobody to blame but yourself.
Yeah, you can't get out of that, really. What do you do with it other than, like Danny is saying, like build these neural pathways that make you believe that you're just not a capable person? Yeah, for sure. Definitely something to leave behind in 2020.
All right, moving on to our question and answer segment here. Giacomo, this one is for you. Do you have any tips for keeping up with cardio? I used to run outside 3 to 4 times a week, but now I'm not motivated enough to run in freezing temperatures and treadmills bore me.
Okay, no longer running outside and treadmills bore you and you want to keep up with cardio. That's a good question. The first thing that I would say is even if you can't do cardio, it's still good to move. I think while you're sorting out what kind of cardio you're going to enjoy, that it's still good to find some sort of goal to keep your activity up. And the one that I rely on time and time again is a step goal. And you don't need to be outside per se to get your steps in. You can march in place. As silly as that sounds, you can do that when you take breaks from your desk or when you're doing your thing, or you can walk around the house. Just like pacing, it adds up, believe it or not. So creating a step goal and getting those steps in is helpful. And then the other thing is walking outside in freezing temperatures is less painful than running outside in freezing temperatures when you get like that cold air rushing through your lungs because you're doing your steady state cardio or whatever, like really getting your heartbeat elevated. I get you there. That can be a little bit challenging. Walking is not so bad outside. I'm thinking a little more on the whole cardio thing though now, and you did mention that the treadmill bores you, but maybe it's less about the treadmill and more about being stationary that you have a hard time getting down with because you'd much rather see the scenery change. I am so much a fan of that. That's why they have those machines where you ever see those bikes where you're looking at a screen and the course is constantly moving as you're pedaling, for example. It makes it so that you don't feel like you're stuck in place on your hamster wheel. Instead of something like that, why not find a useful way to keep yourself not only occupied, but also productive or just enjoying your time while you're stationary. And if it's not a treadmill, then maybe a stationary bike, for example. Stationary bikes are kind of nice because on a treadmill, you're bouncing around. But if you're on a stationary bike, you can still get your heart rate up. And maybe you tune into a really good audiobook, maybe an educational one, maybe one that you just want to listen to enjoy. Maybe you watch a movie, for example. Maybe you read a book. Maybe you use that time to journal. Who knows? Maybe you think while you're on the treadmill, like to have an intention before, or bike or whatever it is, like have an intention before you get into that place where you'll be stationary and then start to do like some of your best thinking. I mean, I do my best thinking when I'm moving, even if the scenery isn't changing, my mind is moving and my creative juices are flowing. So you can definitely make use of that time. And I find that's a good way to replace the lack of motivation because it's a little boring.
I have a trampoline. I got a trampoline off of Facebook Marketplace this week because for the same reason, it's too cold. It's just too cold outside for me to like really get excited to go outside. And I usually do march in place or jog in place. That's what I do at my house. And a lot of people think that's really weird, but I don't have cardio equipment here. But I got the trampoline for $40 and it's quite a workout. This was inspired by my friend and client Nadej, and yeah, I got it. It gives me a little bit of a headache though, so I think I gotta get my trampoline technique down. But hey, that's a cheap, relatively small piece of equipment that you could do cardio on also.
Next one's for you, Danny. I have Hashimoto's and I'm struggling to reach my goal. Is it possible to lose weight and gain muscle?
Okay, so first and foremost, I'm not a doctor. Hashimoto's is a specific type of a thyroid condition. It makes losing weight harder because it slows down your metabolism, essentially. So yes, you can lose weight with Hashimoto's. Any weight loss is calories in, calories out. I cannot believe that's still a controversial thing to say in 2020, 2021 now, as of this publication, but it is still for some reason a controversial thing to say, but it's 100% the truth. It's calories in, calories out. But depending on a certain medical condition that you might have, it could change the way that you burn calories. And Hashimoto's does that. So it does make it so you know, your body with Hashimoto's is probably going to burn fewer calories than somebody else that's the exact same age, height, weight, activity level that does not have Hashimoto's. Generally speaking, in conjunction with treating the Hashimoto's, however your doctor decides to treat that, you're probably going to have to just eat fewer calories. Building muscle should not be a problem with Hashimoto's at all, because it's easier for you to eat in a surplus because your surplus is going to be lower than somebody else's surplus. Anytime you're in a surplus, you will be able to build muscle if you are training accordingly. Now, can you lose weight and build muscle at the same time with Hashimoto's? Maybe you can. I mean, building muscle and losing weight at the same time is tricky for most people, and I assume it's much trickier for somebody with a metabolic disorder. I would pick a direction, either weight loss or muscle building, but yes, you can absolutely do both with Hashimoto's. You should probably do it under the guidance of a physician. It just usually means you're gonna eat fewer calories in order to achieve both of those goals than somebody without it. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. Don't forget, we are starting the group 28-day overhaul challenge on January 4th. So if you would like to start it with us, just go to veganproteins.com and click the overhaul button right on the front page of that. We would love to have you be part of the group, help motivate each other, keep each other accountable, and all of that jazz. And it's just $17 until January 4th. As always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, topics you want us to cover, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or shoot us an email, veganproteins@gmail.com. We always love to hear from you. Thanks again so much for tuning in. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon. Stick with the vision.